Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers, where Robert Duncan McNeil and myself are your co-host, where we review Voyager episodes. Thanks a lot for joining us once again, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good to have you here again. Mm-hmm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can't believe we're so deep into this podcast. It's like, you know, we've passed our 1 year mark. I can't believe it. I can't believe how many episodes we've done. It's crazy.
Has flown by. What's going on with your new move? You're in your new place now. What's been happening?
House is great. I was working today on getting an area leveled outside because, we're up in the mountains up in Utah. And you have to have a hot tub in the mountains. So the hot tub is coming on Tuesday. And I'm excited for that. So I got everything prepped and ready and counting the minutes till the hot tub arrives.
Well, let me get this straight. I want to be clear on this. Did you do the leveling?
I did the leveling, yes.
Oh my gosh.
We got a spot outside for it. And I built a little frame out of pressure-treated lumber, got that all ready, leveled all that out, put in pebbles, and it's fun. I love doing that stuff.
I'm so impressed. You're a handyman. Look at that.
I love being
done.
After this move, I realized that all my tools, my power tools and all my stuff was spread out in all these, like I had a toolbox, I had two toolboxes, and I had these storage containers with stuff in it. I was just like, enough of this. So I went to Home Depot and I got a big giant cabinet for tools. I've never had that in my life. So now I have a whole workshop. It's organized. It's ready to go. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Well, if you recall, when you were still in Atlanta, the Atlanta greater metropolitan area, you were doing a lot of yard work
as well.
Yeah. And I even said that, and you said that you got a lot of value out of that. Like you felt a lot of accomplishment and you enjoyed doing that kind of stuff. And I said, Robbie, this could be your other career. If you ever felt like you didn't want to direct, you could end up being a contractor or you could be you could do some stuff.
I think Nick Offerman from The Office, he does woodworking. He's written a book on it.
Yeah.
He's like, he builds furniture.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a whole thing about, the art of woodworking or something.
Yeah.
He's really into it. So I could totally see doing something like that.
Yeah. And Harrison Ford, who I almost killed, is also a really big woodworker. He supported himself by making cabinets, I think, when he was starting out.
Wow.
But then you can look at somebody like, you remember that song Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice? Like Vanilla Ice, all he does is upscale remodels now. So he'll buy like a mansion in disrepair basically and then remodel the whole thing. And so that's what he does. He doesn't perform music anymore. Well, maybe he does, but his main job is
House renovator.
Million dollar or more house renovator guy. So that's what he's doing.
Back in the olden times when I did a movie called Masters of the Universe before Star Trek Voyager, Courtney Cox was in that movie and we were really good friends. And Courtney, even back then, she was not as successful as her friends' days and all that, but she had bought a house just before that, fixed it up and sold it, and then bought another house that she was right after Masters. Yeah. Little ranch house, nothing special, but she loved doing those remodels and renovations. And I heard, we've sort of lost touch, but I heard even during the friends' days that she would buy, she loved to flip houses. She loved to remodel, renovate, and then flip it out. I don't know if I would want to gamble with that as a business, but I enjoy it just as a as a hobby. I love fixing things up.
Right. I had always heard stories about Courtney doing what she was doing, the whole remodeling, but I didn't know that that started from way back.
Oh, when. Yeah, so way back. Already,
yeah, but the minute she got on Friends, clearly, then she had the capital to really, you know, dive yeah. into this, right? I mean, if you're getting paid $1 million an episode, that's yeah. a lot of yeah. that's a lot of capital to work with, right? To remodel.
I remember with Courtney Cox when we did Masters of the Universe, on one weekend, I wanted to go out to Pomona to the fairgrounds because mm-hmm. they were having a car auction, and I was just curious. I was like, and I mentioned to Courtney, I said, "Hey, I'm going to go out to the car auction. I'm just curious, you know, maybe there'll be something fun." I don't know. Probably I won't buy anything. I wasn't really planning on buying. I just was going for fun. She's like, "Oh, that, you know, old vintage cars. That sounds like something fun that you could fix up." I mean, she's yeah. got this fix up obsession, I think. And she went to the car auction with me and bought a car. She bought a 1960 Mercedes-Benz convertible or something that was, you know, was in fine shape, but yeah. You know, I remember her saying, "Oh, I just love this car. And if it just had a little bit of polish to it, you know, just cosmetics, you could fix this up." And so I think she kept that Mercedes for quite a few years.
So impressive.
Yeah.
And you know, you've had a lot of experience in terms of the Venice property that you're in, or the Marina Del Rey property that was completely remodeled. And then
you
saw my place that was remodeled, and my remodel extended to 2.5 years.
Oh my God.
Because this subcontractor that I decided to hire, I told my general contractor, I don't like the guys that are doing the countertops. I'm going to save a buck or two and I'm going to find somebody. The workers broke my sink, which was then on back order for 7 months, which was everything got messed up because of this one decision I made.
It can be a disaster.
A dollar, you know, literally. So
it's funny with all those, like contractors, subcontractors, and the tradespeople that mm-hmm. do it. Like, you really want people who, it's hard to know if you're getting a tradesperson who knows what they're doing with the electrical or plumbing. Speaking of trades, isn't that in the title of our
fair episode? Trade? It is. It is. Very good. Look at that.
Fair tradespeople.
We came full circle. Yeah. Also, one other thing I want to bring up is, do you remember the challenge I put out there? This is a while ago. I said, what if somebody could write the Thomas Eugene Paris song to the...
To the Hamilton.
Yes. Yeah. Of Alexander Hamilton, right? So that has happened. A couple of our friends from the Guac and Fries group that we're part of, a couple of our friends who are big fans of Trek have put together the Thomas Eugene Paris song. And
now that
we're talking about it here, I guess you haven't seen it, or maybe you have seen it. No? Okay.
I don't think so. Or maybe I've heard about it, but I don't know that I've seen it. Yeah.
Okay. So
is it on YouTube or something?
Well, no, it's been uploaded to our hard drive. So it's going to be, we're going to release it after this, when this episode gets released, so people can see
great.
It. And,
great.
It's really wonderful. The lyrics are great and it's all about Paris. So.
And there's some creative fans out there. So I'm sure it's very interesting and really
very
fun.
Very interesting. Yeah. So you'll have to check it out, everybody.
Okay.
Can't wait. No. All right. So this week's episode is Fair Trade. We came to the title very organically. I'm so impressed with you, Robbie. everyone who is a Patreon patron, please stay tuned for your segment, What Do We Remember? For everybody else, please stay tuned while Robbie and I go watch Fair Trade. Okay. Robbie and I are back from watching Fair Trade.
Yes, we are. And it was trading a lot of fair things. That didn't really go anywhere, but there was a lot of trading and a lot of wheeling and dealing going on in this episode. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's start off as we always do. Let us give our synopsis, our poetry synopsis. You'll start with your haiku and I'll follow with the limerick.
Okay. Here's a haiku for Fair Trade. Neelix wants to help. Tricked into selling some drugs. Tom gives good advice. Bam!
I thought you were going to say, Tom gives good back rubs, but no.
He does too. He does give good back rubs.
All right. Good job. Short and to the point. I like it. Yes. I like it. Okay. Here we go.
All right.
The limerick.
Limerick time.
Fair trade limerick. Neelix attempts to assist. By Tuvok and Torres dismissed. Medical supplies trade by Wix. Add drug deal gone bad to the mix. Neelix must clean since Janeway's pissed.
It's great. Thanks. He does have to clean. And she was pissed.
She was so mad.
She was really pissed.
That was crazy. The teleplay is by Andre Bormanis, our science consultant. My goodness.
I know.
How many teleplays did Andre do? I don't even remember.
I don't know how many, but not a lot.
Not a lot, yeah. No. Yeah. He's our science. And isn't he the science consultant on Orville as well?
Yes, he is. Yeah, on the Orville,
Okay. Yeah. Story by Ronald Wilkerson and Jean-Louis Matthias, I think.
Uh-huh.
Directed by a favored director. A lot of people enjoyed this director when he showed up. Jesus Salvador Trevino. Jesus Trevino.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Jesus Trevino was like a breath of fresh air. He was such a zen, calm, very heartfelt. He had passion, but it wasn't like, it was just focused and you trusted him. And I thought he had a really good eye. I think Jesus came from post-production. I think he was an editor.
Okay.
If I remember
correctly. That
sounds
right.
But he was, he was very, very kind, and you just felt safe with him. You just felt like it was going to be a calm, safe, he was going to be responsible and shoot a good show.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. A wonderful energy about him. He really sets the tone when you're around him. You feel like, he's very open-minded, an open heart, an open mind, open to collaboration. Yeah. When you come to talk to him, you feel like he's actually listening to you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He takes the time and he shuts out everything else and he just focuses on you and listens to what you have to say. And if it's something that is a bit of an emergency or something that's going crazy, he was so even keel, you know?
Always and very
the only,
calm.
Yeah, and the only other person I could really say that I could compare Jesus to in terms of his even keeledness would be you when you direct. I mean, you're very even keeled. So yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
So maybe you learned a little bit from Jesus.
Sure I did. Right? He was very generous with his thoughts and absolutely.
Yeah. Have you seen him since at
no,
all anywhere?
Okay. No, not really. He Jesus lived down in Venice. He had lived there forever.
Oh.
And I remember right after Star Trek, a couple of years after Voyager finished, Jesus, I remember either hearing about him or maybe I did run into him and he had sold his place in Venice that he'd had for like 30 or 40 years. So he made a killing and he moved. I want to say he moved down to the desert. I feel like he moved down to like Palm Desert or La Quinta or something. He retired. Yeah.
Really?
But that's been a while. I'm just looking up Jesus right now. He's 75 years old right now.
Yeah.
Film director, television director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show everybody a photo of Jesus. Mm. There he is.
There he is.
That's him.
With his signature glasses on right there.
Yes. He's a he was a good guy. I think everybody really liked him a lot.
Yeah. I wanted him to adopt me basically, but that didn't happen. So.
Yeah. What would you give? Let's just cut to the chase. 1 to 10, what would you give this episode fair trade?
I'm going to say for storyline and character development, specifically Neelix character development, I would give it a 7 or 8 because of the character development. And also because at the end, the scene with Janeway really kind of brought me to tears, which hasn't happened. Maybe it's happened one other time in all the episodes we've reviewed up until this point, season 3.
Yeah.
It really moved me emotionally. So,
7 or 8. Wow.
I'm going to do a 7 or 8 is what I'm going to do.
I struggle with this episode because there's a lot of things about it I love when I break it down into moments and parts, but as a whole, I would probably give this a 6.
Okay.
As a whole, but there were some moments that were 10s to me.
Right.
But it was a very inconsistent episode to me.
In terms of the tone of or in terms of like when you're saying
story, I felt like the story just didn't compel me for some reason. And it felt very uneven to me, but I did enjoy it. Ultimately it was good. And like I said, there were some moments, I agree with you, that last scene with the captain, I'd give that scene a 10.
Right.
I thought the scene when Neelix came in to talk to Paris, I would give that scene a 10, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a great scene. Yeah. But there were a lot of other moments where I was like, I don't know. Let's go through it.
There, we're in the corridor, right? So that's the first scene. Neelix is chasing after Tuvok, saying, "Hey, remember we were supposed to meet at this time?" And Tuvok's like, "What? What's going on?" And Neelix is basically volunteering to learn about the security department.
Yeah,
all the ins and outs of security. He wants to know everything, right?
Wants to know everything, and maybe he could join the security team. Yeah. And Tuvok says, "Well, we don't give those assignments out, easily." And so Neelix feels a little shut down, I think, by Tuvok. It seemed like, in fact, as the door is closing, Tuvok's busy and he's hits the button and the turbo lift door is shutting and Neelix is still trying to talk and the door sort of shuts on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, bummer.
He feels dismissed for sure.
Yeah. And then we go into engineering. Mm-hmm. Neelix walks into engineering. The first thing we see the elevator coming down and Vorik.
This is the first appearance of Ensign Vorik.
The very first appearance of Ensign Vorik, the Vulcan. He was played by Alexander Enberg, who had previously played a Vulcan Ensign Torek in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
And you did know that?
Yeah, and also the other glaring fact that you've not said, I'm waiting for
you. I was going to get to it, but
yeah, go ahead. I'll let you get
Well, the other glaring fact is that he is the son of Jerry Taylor. and here's another interesting tidbit about Vorik. So Vorik's coming down the elevator, which I always love those shots when we see the elevator working in engineering because it's a cool part of the set. Mm-hmm. We rarely used it. Alex Enberg played Torek in TNG's episode The Lower Decks. Kind of interesting title since there's a series now.
Lower Decks, yes.
He played a Vulcan ensign in that, named Torek, and now he's playing Vorik. And Jerry Taylor had said that these two characters were twins, that they were brothers.
Oh, I love it.
They were twins, and that was, and I think that is the legend and the mythology of these two characters, which would be interesting. I wish that they had done Nick Locarno and Tom Paris are twin brothers.
Yes.
Yes. That could have been an interesting,
Yeah. Like Nick Locarno is such a rebel that he didn't even take the Paris last name. He took Locarno instead.
Yeah, exactly.
His mother's name, right? A half brother of Paris. I think that would have been perfect. That's a very smart move. They should have did that.
Anyway, so Vorik comes down in the elevator and then we see Neelix coming in to try to talk to B'Elanna. And I love the staging that B'Elanna was like under the rail and up testing out, readings on the engine. I'd never seen anyone really stage a scene that way. I thought it was really interesting. And then Neelix climbs under the rail and he's trying to get in there and asking B'Elanna if he can learn about engineering because Tuvok sort of shut him down. So now he's like, so we're setting up here that Neelix really wants to feel more a part of the team, or that he's got some sort of insecurity. He's sort of desperate to like find a place that fits him, which pays off in it's really drives the whole episode. These two scenes set that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets a call. Janeway says, Neelix, I need a report to the bridge. So Neelix comes out on the bridge. She says, Neelix, what is this in front of us? We look up on the view screen. There's a big cloud, this vast expanse of space. And she's like, what, Neelix, do you know anything about this? And you can see on Neelix's face, he's like, I couldn't quite read it, actually. Whether he was keeping a secret or whether he didn't know. And
but he seemed unsettled is what he looked like.
Yeah, he seemed unsettled.
Yeah.
And he says it's called the Necrit Expanse.
Right.
And it's a vast territory. Nobody knows much about it.
Yes.
And he seemed unsettled. It seemed like he had a secret. Janeway says, well, can we take the ship around it? Tuvok says, no, it's far too big. We're going to have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, we might need some supplies. We need some parts and some things. And so is there anywhere around here, Neelix? And Neelix, again, is sort of evasive. He's like, there's a trading post. But she's like, well, what are the coordinates? I don't really remember. He's sort of evasive about it. And then I think Chakotay comes up with the coordinates. Oh, it's right here. I got it. I see it right here. It's 3 light years away. And
yeah.
And so off they go to to find this trading post.
Now, I just want to rewind for a second. When I first heard what the ominous interstellar dust clouds were, I thought they said naked.
The naked expanse.
Mm-hmm. I had to rewind it just once. And I said, did they say naked expanse? No.
No.
The naked.
That would have been, everybody would have been happy about that. The naked expanse. Let's all go play in the naked expanse, y'all.
Something like that. What are the people that are called naturists? What are the people who
naturists?
Is that right? Yes. Those who live without clothes are naturists.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The naturist expanse.
The name. Okay. So now heading towards the station, we have a very poor visual effects, old school shot of us heading towards the station, which kind of pulled me out, to be honest. But I want this to be remastered. I want all visual effects on Voyager to be remastered. That'd be so wonderful. Mm-hmm. So now we're on the bridge and we're being hailed by what sounds like, did you get Barat?
Barat,
not Barack as in Barack Obama, but no, Barat, Barat, right? There's a T or a D at the end of that, right?
Okay. Barat.
Yeah, yep. Barat. He's the manager of this trade station.
Yep.
And the minute we see him, my first thought was, okay, yep. Beauty and the Beast.
Here Beauty and the Beast, is. Right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Did you start singing the Broadway?
Doing show tunes.
Yes. So what is the Beauty and the Beast song? How's the chorus for Beauty and the Beast go? The actual song.
Tale as old as time. Da 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 da. Barely even friends. Then somebody bends. Beauty and the Beast. Something like that.
That was what I was hoping you would do. And you did. Thank you so much, Robbie.
You're welcome.
See, I want to showcase Robbie's past. He did a lot of musical theater when he was younger.
I did do a lot of musical theater.
And so this is a chance for him to shine. And I wanted him to sing. And he, sure enough, he sang it. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Check that off the list. Okay.
It was Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah,
Barat totally. Looks like Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And even later on, he's on the, you know, I'm jumping ahead, but he's on our ship and he's standing right next to Janeway. And I was like, there's Beauty and the Beast right there. There's Janeway with a beauty ponytail thingy and the Beast right next to her. And he looks 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
And it was
I just wonder if that was the influence that the makeup team had
it's when they did
the makeup for this character, right?
Got to be.
The deal that he offers Janeway is not that good. It's basically any trade you make, I take 20% commission. It's like, wait a minute, you have nothing to do with the trade. You just have the station. That's it. You're in control of the station. I guess that's a big thing, but still it's 20%.
Well, it was not just 20%. It was also, I'll monitor you at all.
Yeah.
I'm monitoring everything. Like I am watching you.
Big brother will be
and
watching.
I'm taking your money. Mm-hmm. And do you accept those terms? Okay. Yeah. We'll do some business.
Right.
Yeah. He was pretty harsh. Like the Beast. Yeah.
That's
he's
right.
Like the Beast.
He was the Beast. And the Beast is kind of harsh in the beginning, right?
Yes.
He's not really that friendly. So now they're in Barat's, what would you call that? A control room? Observation room, office, control room. Let's say control room. I like that.
I think.
Barat's control room, where Janeway shows Barat her shopping list. She's like, this is what I need. I need Pergium. I need this. I need that. And he's like, maybe I can hook you up with some sellers. Okay. We jump to the trade station corridor and we see Chakotay and Paris for the first time, right? They meet a merchant who tries to sell them Reludian crystals. Ingesting one will make days of tedious travel seem like moments of exquisite rapture. So basically, narcotics. This is this is what this guy is trying to sell to Chakotay and Paris.
Yeah. Yeah. At first we ask him, we say, do you have any magnetic spindle bearings for our reaction control assembly?
That's right.
And he's like, nope, don't have the spindle bearings.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, how long is your journey? You have a long voyage ahead? He asks.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked my delivery, Paris's delivery. He goes, you could say that.
that
was a very made me laugh.
Was funny, but it also sounded a little out of the. I could hear it was a VO. That was the only time that I could. Yeah, for me, it's the only time I've ever heard Paris's line sound kind of VO-ish. I'm like,
interesting.
A little bit different than
I didn't catch that, but maybe. Yeah. But I like the reading on it. Yep. Anyway, I say, you could say that, and then he says, "Well, I've got these Reludian crystals." you know, which is clearly a drug. Yeah. He's like, this will make time, you know, fly by for you. And we're like, no, thanks. No, thanks. Yeah. We pass on the drugs and then Chakotay and Paris starts to walk away. And I loved my classic Tom Paris line reading. Nice place.
Same intonation as yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And nice place. Point
that out. There was a couple classic Tom Paris lines in there. So Neelix is looking for maps at this point.
Yeah. He meets with a map dealer, which the map dealer kind of says, don't you know about this area? The region is too unstable. There's no maps. There are no maps. Okay. Yeah. And at that point, they're interrupted by a lone Talaxian who Neelix knows very well. And now, when I first heard Neelix say his name, it sounded like Wixipad. Like there's an iPad.
Wixaban.
Wixaban. Wixipad. 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 I heard Wixipad. A P-A-D at the end. But then he quickly says Wix. So obviously his nickname or the shortened version is just W-I-X.
Yeah.
They go to the tavern. Wix says, come have an ale with me.
Great scene. Really nice scene. At first, Neelix is bragging about how important he is on the ship.
That's correct.
Saying, you know, he's got all these important jobs. And then Wick says something like, you know, you owe me. And so they sort of imply that there was something they were involved in that Wick sort of took the fall for it. And Neelix got off.
Correct.
You know, got away with it, whatever it was.
Yeah, the Ubians, the deal with the Ubians. That's the alien race that Wix got caught. Neelix got away, right? So he took the blame for that one. And that's really the first time that we get a glimpse of this secret past.
Yeah,
Neelix. You know, we know he's been a trader or a junk dealer, but we didn't know that he dealt with illegal contraband.
Yeah, so he dealt with contraband, and he's kind of ashamed of it.
Yeah.
He feels like he owes Wixaban something for taking a fall. You get that sense. He does tell Wix that he needs a map. Mm-hmm. Again, he says, I need a map to be useful. Because he says, when Wixaban sort of brings up this past, that their relationship, Neelix sort of admits that he may not be as needed or important on Voyager. Right. He sort of turns in the scene and says, you know what, I don't think I may not even be needed anymore on this ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to get a map of this place to be useful, you know? So he sort of sets that up with Wix of like, that's important. So they have that. And now Wix knows that what Neelix is looking for, which sets us up for the next scene. We go to the kitchen, back to the mess hall. Mm-hmm. Neelix is kind of trudging around. We see Vorik again. We see Alex Enberg in there, and he says, hey, I've come to fix the replicator systems or something. You know,
he was in there to adjust the control interface on the food replicators.
On the food That's replicators, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because he was in there and I was like, why are we setting up this character we've never met before, Vorik? Now we've seen him in two scenes, you know, we've seen him again. I know that in an upcoming episode, Vork's going to be very important. And so I think that's why they started laying him in here in all these random places. But anyway, Vork's in there. Chakotay walks in with Wix into the mess hall, and Wix has found the spindle bearings.
Yes.
He found what Chakotay was looking for. And then Neelix says to Vorik, he says, hey, Vorik, could you come back later and fix that? It's not that important.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing that because he needs to talk to Wix privately.
That's right. That's right.
And he says, hey, did you steal these? Like, because he knows about Wix's past.
Mm-hmm.
And Wix is like, no, this was a fair trade.
I wouldn't do that to you. I would not do that to you.
Yeah, I wouldn't set you up or steal something or put you in a complicated situation. So he also says he's got a plan. Wix says, I've got a very, you know, complicated plan to use this medical supplies to trade for what the captain wants, and I can get you your maps.
Yeah. Medical supplies, per diem, and a map. That's what's involved in this trade. And some type of monetary compensation too.
Yeah.
I think.
And then he could also get the money to buy his ship back.
Yeah. To get his ship back.
Yeah. Which they've been holding. Mm-hmm. And he says, all of my plan will work and it's all above board. But you just can't tell anybody about the medical supplies because Barat's going to want his 20%.
Correct. So he's Neelix asking,
is like,
keep quiet.
You know, well, maybe, you know, I think Neelix is in this moral dilemma. Like, I should help my friend Wicks get his ship back.
Yeah.
You know, and if he needs the money, if I keep this a secret, he'll get the money he needs and the captain will get what she wants and I'll get my map.
Right.
Seems like a one little white lie of not telling anybody what they're doing.
Yeah.
Is not a big deal and everybody wins. So Neelix agrees.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So they're in the shuttle interior and Wicks basically tells Neelix that they need to beam to a very specific part of the trade station. It's a remote part of the trade station. That's kind of away from most of the hustle and bustle. So they end up being beamed to corridor 14L and they're waiting around. And then that's when we see Sutok. And as I'm watching this, and this is literally the very first time I've seen this episode, just, you know, between you and me and the rest of the world, I sat there and I said, is that the same alien? That's the same alien as earlier. But then I thought maybe he's just the same species and that this is just another alien, right? Maybe this species is known as the narcotics dealing species or something. But then also I'm looking at this alien. And I'm like, God, that face looks so familiar to me. Like, did it give a little bit of familiar? Did you think of anything?
I didn't. No, okay. I didn't.
What did that alien look like to you? Kind of like a
lizard of some kind. And he had the hood on that was very mysterious.
Yeah. To me, it looked like a hound dog or something. He kind of like had a drooping face. But then I started going back and I was like, wait a minute. Do you remember this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't he kind of look like Sutok?
He does look
a little bit, right?
Yeah.
This is from, Persistence of Vision or whatever, when we were having those hallucinations, and this guy was the guy that was the reason.
Yeah, Troublemaker.
Yeah, the Troublemaker.
All those Troublemakers look alike.
They all have those kind of droopy faces. So, you know, I thought it was the same alien, but it's not. It's a little bit different.
Well, I immediately, when they beam down to this, like, sketchy part of the ship, the trade station, and they've got the medical supplies. By the way, in the shuttle, when he comes back with the medical supplies, he says, we're going to get 20 kilograms. And Neelix is like, wait a minute, only 20 kilograms? You told Chakotay that you'd get 45. So already you're starting to go, wait a minute, this Wicks guy is like, he's hustling. He's on a hustle right now.
He's hustling for sure. Like
it's not a fair trade because he said one thing and it was supposed to be 45 kilograms of pergium and it's only gonna be 20 kilograms. So anyway, you know, things are sketchy. They beam down to this part of the ship and there's the lizard alien and
Sutok.
Yeah. We knew he was a drug dealer cause he offered the drugs earlier. And
right.
For me, I mean, you know, by now I'm like, oh, these aren't medical supplies. These are drugs.
Yeah. Let's talk about those drugs too. They look like giant Tic Tac candy.
Yeah. Yeah, just
large and later we learn that they're referred to as tubes, right? Mm-hmm. But you hold them, and then they have this really weird blue glow that comes out, and that I guess, you know, is how the individual gets their narcotic high from that blue glow is what I'm guessing.
I guess so. Yeah,
I don't know. But then Wicks says, okay, as soon as we get payment, we will, you know, we'll make the trade and we'll be done. And Sutok says, yeah, okay, I got what you need. And he turns around and then pulls out a phaser and shoots at Neelix. Wicks is already ready for it. Wicks is already grabbing it like in his inner pocket as the other guys turned around. Sutok has turned away, right?
And by the way, what he's grabbing is a Starfleet phaser that he took off the shuttle.
Right.
We forgot to mention that.
Yes, we did.
As they're leaving, he's you know, searching around the shuttle and all of a sudden pulls out a phaser and sticks in his pocket. And he looks like, why are you bringing that? And he goes, well, it's dangerous. You know, we should just have something, just in case.
Yeah.
And of course it does turn out to be dangerous.
Right.
Drug dealer tries to turn on them.
Yeah.
Wicks has the Starfleet phaser.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a quick, brief firefight, and Wicks shoots the drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's down.
Yeah.
Wicks says, let's get out of here. Get out of here. And they beam back to the shuttle. And
but there were it's a little messy at this point, but did you see the other henchmen?
Aliens?
Yeah. So there were other people that were with Sutok, the droopy dog face or lizard alien guy, and they're the ones that steal. They take the drugs. They take the narcotics, mm-hmm. right? Don't they take the container?
I think so. Yeah, it's a bit of a chaos.
When that happens, right? Okay, then they beam back after they've lost the drugs, basically.
They've lost the drugs. Mm-hmm. They've shot the guy, and they have this firefight.
Yeah,
and they get back, and Neelix is pissed.
Oh, he's so mad.
And okay. Wicks is like, "I'm going to tell Janeway."
Wicks says to Neelix in the shuttle, he says, "Wait till they discover the whole truth about you." And then he asks Neelix, "So you would let Barat put me in cryostatic suspension?" Which mm-hmm. I'm only imagining how weird that must be, or how not happy, or not not a good thing to have done to you. Cryostatic suspension, whatever that means.
Whatever that means sounds bad.
Doesn't sound good. Yeah, but Wicks really throws this guilt trip about his entire year in the Ubian prison, where he had to eat worms to stay alive, and vermin are chewing on you all night long. Yep. And you get punished in ways that you can't even imagine. Neelix literally caves. He reluctantly agrees to say nothing, and that the debt is now paid. He doesn't want to have anything to do with Wicks from now on. We're done. All right. He just cut ties with him at that point.
Yep.
And then the next scene, we're in the conference room. Barat is there. The station manager is now in the conference room of Voyager, mounting an investigation into a murder that has happened on the station. He, from his initial investigation, he discovers that there are unidentifiable energy readings. He then does a spectral analysis, which then reveal that these energy readings have a Federation phaser signature. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that Tuvok's quarters that we see next?
I think so. I think that's his desk in the
office area of his quarters. Yep. Yeah. Okay. I wrote Tuvok's office, quarters, Tuvok asked Neelix whether, and see, this is where Tuvok pronounces it Wixabon. Because before I heard Wixapad. And then now it's Wixabon. And
Wixabon. I thought,
that rhymes with Cinnabon, right? Cinnabon buns. Mm-hmm. And he asks if Wixabon has ever been involved in criminal activity. And Neelix denies it all. He says, nope. And then he says, okay, well, I need you to attend the interrogation of your friend, of your acquaintance, Wix, because I need you to provide insight into whether or not he's lying, or, give me some insight into this. So they do. They go down to the tavern station. The tavern on the station is where they head to next, and Tuvok, Neelix, and Wicks are there. Neelix basically,
Tuvok says to Wicks, like, "Where were you? This guy was murdered. What were you doing?" And Wicks goes, "Oh, I was asleep."
Yeah.
And Tuvok's like, "Was there anybody to back that up?" And he goes, "I sleep alone. Sadly, I sleep alone."
No. Perfect alibi right there.
Yeah.
Sleeps alone. So Tuvok says, "That's it for now. I have more questions for you later. I'm going to let you go." And Neelix tells Tuvok, "I'm going to stay for a glass of ale, a Tova ale," is what he said. So this is his excuse to basically confront Wicks about everything that's going on. And that's when we learned that Wicks wasn't really working for himself. Wicks was working for this group of people called the Kaladi traders, who are very cutthroat and just,
they're suppliers in the drug trade.
Correct.
And they are not happy.
No.
That they lost their drugs and didn't get their money, didn't get anything.
Yeah.
And so Wick says, "You know what? They're really not happy, and you don't want to mess with these guys. And they've agreed to let you live, Neelix, if we can get some warp plasma. Some fresh warp plasma from Voyager.
Just 3 grams. That's all we need. 3 grams of warp plasma by 0900 hours in the morning."
Yep. And Neelix is not happy at all about this situation, but he does agree to help Wicks again. He keeps going another step further and another step further.
Yeah.
So this is the next scene where Paris is in this storage room looking for a box.
Okay.
He's looking for a box numbered. I didn't write it down, but whatever the number is.
I did.
You did? What's the box number?
I did. It's L647X7. L647X7.
Yes. Anyway, he's looking for a box, and Neelix walks in and says, you know, why were you in prison, basically?
Yeah, what put you in prison?
What put you in prison? And Paris sort of thinks about it for a beat. He sort of walks around. And he says, you know, it comes down to one simple fact, mm-hmm. that I didn't tell the truth.
Right.
I made a mistake, and then I lied about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, it was such a great scene, because it's exactly what Neelix needed to hear.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And to elaborate what you said, when Paris says he made a mistake, he doesn't validate it, but he then adds to it by saying, I made a mistake, which happens to everyone.
That's right.
Which happens to people, is what you said. But what I got from that is it happens to everyone. Everyone makes a mistake. And if he had admitted that mistake, it would have been a lot better. But lying about it, and his life was almost ruined. If it wasn't for Janeway plucking him out of that New Zealand penal colony, Tom Paris would have been just a sad sack for the rest of his
And it's interesting. It's interesting, because with Paris, you know, he says it comes down to one simple fact. Mm-hmm. That I didn't tell the truth, that I made a mistake and I lied about it.
Right.
But it's interesting, because I always thought that Paris was in prison because he had betrayed Starfleet and gone and fought with a Maquis. So he was basically in prison for being a Maquis.
Mm-hmm.
So this one was a little confusing to me, because I'm like, well, Paris's backstory is a little mysterious, and lying about something sounds more like Nick Locarno.
This is the Nick Locarno story that he's referencing. That's when you say that whole thing about the one mistake you made, you know, and not admitting it.
But that's what I'm saying is like Nick Locarno and Tom Paris, they mix them. Sometimes when it's convenient, they write them like they're the same character. And when it's not, they write them. And so it's a little inconsistent to me. This one sounded like it was kind of straying into Nick Locarno territory and not Tom Paris territory, which I thought was interesting, but it fit this story. It fit what Neelix needed to hear, for sure.
So if you were to do a hybrid of those two characters, a hybrid name, Nick Locarno and Tom Paris, so it would be Nom La Paris, or it would be Tick Picarno. Tick Picarno or Nom La Paris. Those are your choices.
The other thing I thought was interesting is that you find Paris in this storage room, and he's looking for a box, and it appears like he's been looking for a while. Like, it's hard to find this box. Mm-hmm. Then Neelix walks in, doesn't really pay attention, and then in 2 seconds goes, oh, Tom, here you go. Here's the box. And I'm like, what an idiot Tom is. He's like looking at his pad, and he's looking at every box. And Neelix goes, hey, it's right there. So it's like, nice.
I guess, you know, he's going to take over your job as container looker.
Yeah, Paris is not very smart. He's cute. Tom Paris is cute, but he's not that smart. Can't find a box with the numbers on it. Anyway, so Neelix is like, thanks, and starts to walk out. And Paris stops him and says, hey, Neelix, hold on a second. You know, a few of us are going to the resort in the holodeck tonight. We're going to do the resort program in the holodeck. Why don't you come along, hang out with us?
Yeah.
And Neelix is like, no, I think I'm just going to go to sleep for the night.
Right. Which he does.
Liar. Liar. But I thought that was a nice moment for Neelix. It was a nice moment for Tom,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of share some vulnerability and some truth there. And then to, you know, Tom makes an effort. It was a nice sign for me that Tom Paris is evolving as a character, that they're giving him these nice moments rather than the chip on the shoulder, womanizer, all the stuff that they just hit so hard in that first season or two. They give Paris these opportunities to really be a likable, you know, good guy, which I think was always there underneath, but he didn't have the chance to do it.
It was nice that Tom invited Neelix to the Lord Hollow program. That's a nice gesture for sure. But of course, Neelix can't accept, because he has to go to sleep, but sleep really means going to engineering, where we have Neelix and Vorik from some more Vorik time.
More Vorik. We've never met Vorik. We've never seen him. No one's ever talked about him. And all of a sudden, he's in lots of scenes.
Yeah. I do like to, I would like to say that Vorik's voice is the smoothest Vulcan voice you've ever heard. He's like a radio DJ. Alex Emberg's Vulcan voice is so, you know, Coast 103, smooth hits kind of a.
Yeah, he's the Tom Paris of Vulcans.
He's the,
he's the Tom Paris.
Yeah, you're right. He's the yes, ma'am of Vulcans. Yes. Yeah. Okay, okay. Very good. Yeah, yeah, I didn't even make that connection. Thank you for sharing that with me. So Neelix is there to say that he's going to log some time in the Jeffries tube, which is kind of an odd request. But you know, Vorik has seen him around Torres saying, I can help, I can do this. So buys it. He buys it in a second. He doesn't say anything. He says, go ahead, go up there, right? And what a wonderful shot of Neelix climbing up the Jeffries tube. He opens up that one panel, and now they shoot it. You know, Jesus decides to shoot it from the reverse angle, clearly moving the wall away. And you just see the remorse that is just coming across Neelix's face about
he can't do it. He
can't extract the plasma. He can't. The other thing is he pronounced plasma plasma.
Plasma. I noticed that too.
Tomato, tomato. Yeah. So, yeah. You know. It is his right to pronounce it however he wants, but it did sound, it did catch me for a second when I heard that. I'm like, whoa, rewind.
Right. Yeah. Neelix goes back to the station to meet Wix at the arranged time at 9 o'clock, where he's supposed to have this plasma. and Neelix says, I couldn't do it. I can't steal from my friends.
Yeah.
And just as they're about to get into this argument about it, they hear off camera, you know, you two stop.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, they're going to arrest Neelix and Wix. Like, oh boy, they're going to arrest them. And then you see the police guys or whatever run right by them and they arrest Chakotay and Paris, charging them with murder and dealing.
Conspiring with known drug traffickers.
And yes.
So two charges.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that Janeway is furious about this. Barat shows them some video that, well, look, Chakotay and Paris were talking to this drug dealer who died later. So, and there was a phaser, a Starfleet phaser signature. So it's got to be them. Got to be. Yeah. And Janeway and Tuvok both say, you know, this is circumstantial. This is not evidence. Mm-hmm. And she's furious.
Yeah, and she says, look, if you're going to interrogate my men, you're going to have my security officer present during all interrogations, because she doesn't want any mischief to go on, right? I mean, no coerced confessions, none of that stuff. So, and then, of course, Barat tries to take control by saying, well, I'll take that under advisement, you know, whether or not you'll allow that is another case. But we do know that somebody is going to serve 50 years, not 15, but 50 years of cryostatic suspension for this murder.
Yeah.
And, you know, the minute he comes out with that, Janeway plays hardball with him this whole time. She's just like, she gets in his face. She's like, I am not going to allow any of my crew members to serve time for a crime that they did not do.
And so Neelix feels horrible about this. Mm-hmm. And Neelix says to Wix that he has a plan.
Right.
He's got a plan and he's going to do it. And he doesn't care whether Wix helps or not. And he's kind of walks away and Wix says, okay, I'm not going to let you do this alone.
Mm-hmm. Now we're in Barat's control room where Neelix and Wix present their plan to set a trap for the Kaladi traitors. Will this plan work? Will it not? So now we're in this remote station corridor where we see Neelix and Wix. They're waiting while Barat is observing on a security camera. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, all of a sudden, security camera starts fritzing. And now you see nothing. You see zero image of Neelix and Wix.
Yeah, nobody's there.
Yeah.
And Barat says, someone is tampering with this video's feed.
They're transmitting a false visual signal right now.
Yeah, they're transmitting a false visual signal. Something's going on. We'll give it a few minutes. I think it says 5 minutes.
Right.
And we're going in.
Right. And now we see we're back with our main players and we're back in that remote part of the station. And now the Kaladi appear. We see three of them. We see Tozin, one of the most powerful Kaladi, and two henchmen. Well, the minute I saw Tozin, I don't know what you thought, but I thought immediately the creature from the Black Lagoon. that face so creature. But the only difference is they threw a bunch of hair. rock star hair on there. But
also there was a lot of teeth. I felt like there were 100 little teeth.
It was
teeth.
Like piranha teeth inside of a creature from the Black Lagoon. And then rock star hair on top of it. Like 80s rocker hair.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so that's Tozin, and I really feel like the hair pulled me out. I felt like they didn't need that.
Oh, that's
you know what I'm saying? It's like, is it, if this is the most powerful Kaladi, make him menacing. And that goofy hair really pulled me out for a second.
Interesting.
Yes. Tozen then scans the sample and he realizes, goodness gracious.
This is trash.
This is contaminated. This is not the right stuff.
Yep.
And then this is the Neelix heroic moment. This is the redemption moment from the episode False Prophets, where he looked so unheroic. And now Neelix looks heroic. He sits
He's
there.
He's very smart. He's got a plan. He's five steps ahead of, of Tosin. He says, I unsealed the canister. It's been leaking plasma into this room. And Neelix says, you try to shoot us, the whole place blows up.
Right.
You try to beam out of here, the whole place blows
blow up.
Up
there too,
I've leaked this plasma into the room and you're stuck.
And he calls him a name too. Neelix goes, you Aurelian lung maggot. So, nice names from Neelix.
Nice names. So Tosin is stuck. He's like, what do I do? Do I buy this? Is this a bluff?
Right.
He doesn't know. And Barat suddenly arrives trying to arrest them.
Oh, but hey, you skipped over the fact that Tosin actually tries to call his bluff, right? He says like, okay, then I will kill you. And then Neelix ones ups it by saying, I'm ready to, you know, basically he says, I'm ready to die. Go ahead.
I'm ready to die. Yeah.
You can kill me as long as I know that it gets rid of one. I think this is where he calls him Aurelian lung maggot, right? If it gets rid of one bad guy like you, it's worth it. Go ahead. Shoot it. Shoot. What are you waiting for? Shoot, shoot. And now because they're playing this game of chicken and Neelix doesn't flinch, but it does bring the time to bring Barat and his henchmen in to sort of save the day in a way. But it's truly Neelix's game right here. You know, it's all about the mind at this point. Can you psychologically defeat your opponent? And that's what Neelix did. He one-upped him in every, it was like a chess game. Like every move that Tosin performed, Neelix had a better move. Right.
So Neelix was very smart, very heroic. Mm-hmm. When Barat arrives, they say freeze, but one of the drug dealers fires a weapon anyway.
Yeah. Like, hello.
There is a plasma explosion in the room. Neelix is knocked unconscious, and we don't know what's happened for a moment.
Yeah.
Next scene, we see he's in sickbay and he's alive.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says, you know, one of the criminals was killed. But these guys were taken into custody. They were arrested and Wicks even got his shuttle back and he's gone on his way. It seems like the plan worked and everybody got what they wanted here. You know, the good guys won.
Yeah.
And then Janeway arrives. Then Janeway walks in. She's not happy.
She clears the room, and I love how the doctor is still kind of hovering there. And Janeway just shoots him this look like, "You got to get out." And the doctor doesn't say that. The doctor knows he's gone. He's like, "Nope, something's going down."
And she says, "How can I ever trust you again?"
Oh yeah.
And that's just
that's devastating for Neelix.
Bad. I know, for Neelix.
Yeah, it's devastating for us as an audience to watch this, but it's also devastating for Neelix to have to go through this. That you know, and let's face it, John Ethan Phillips has always played Neelix as if he's in love with Captain Janeway. Remember, we talked about that before. So really, the person that you have so much affection for or respect for is disappointed by your actions and your behavior. Yeah. And it really is. It's being scolded by mom is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Like, how could you do
scolded
this?
Scolded is a family. Putting it lightly. Because
berated.
I've rarely seen Janeway as angry and as disappointed and as serious as she was in this scene. And Neelix tries to explain himself. He says, look, I took one step and then that led to, you know, one lie that led to another lie and another one. And she doesn't buy it.
Yeah.
And he even says to her, he says, you know, I feel like my usefulness here has ended.
Yeah. And she asked him, you know, point blank, she says, Neelix, what was so important that you would throw away your principles? What? And that's when he says, a map, you know, a map. And then that reverse shot, the close up on Neelix, it looks like she's laughing. I can't tell, but it looks like there's a little bit of like where she's like, she's covering her mouth like, oh my God, you know.
Well, I think she's just dumbfounded. Like, she's a map, all of this for a map.
Right.
How does that make sense? And then he says, I wanted to help. Like, I felt like my usefulness had ended here.
That's right.
And you didn't need me anymore.
Right.
She says, there will be consequences.
Yes.
And he says, you know, I'll leave. I'll drop me off. I'll leave.
Yeah,
I'll get off the ship. You know, you don't need me anymore and you're mad at me. And she's like, no, you're not going anywhere. Yeah. You have obligations here. You're part of this family.
You cannot walk away from responsibilities just because you made a mistake. You are part of a family.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so that we're all in this together, she says.
Yes. Yeah. And the first, and she says earlier that the first duty of any Starfleet officer is the truth. And you violated that duty and there will be consequences.
Mm-hmm. The first duty. That's the name of the TNG episode that Nick Locarno did.
Look at that. Look at
the first duty of any officer. That's right. Mm-hmm. She says you're going to have to scrub. Start by scrubbing the exhaust manifolds. That will be your assignment.
Yeah. And did you see what time he had to report for deuterium maintenance?
No, what time?
0400. Which is funny because that is Johnny Ethan Phillips' usual
call time
is at 4 a.m. So I sat there going, that's not much of a punishment because he's used to that call time.
He's used to 4 a.m. That's right. I love that last scene because he looks so happy to be called a part of the family.
He was ecstatic. And to
be useful. He's going to scrub some. He's got a job to do, and that's all he was looking for anyway.
Right.
I loved her look when he took off. She had a look of that softened, you know, that it, as hard as she was in that scene at the end, she sort of, you know, you saw that she understood his emotional state and his, and some of his reasoning, even though she had to have this punishment and there had to be consequences, but
And watching this scene, it really did bring some tears to my eyes, and I got emotional watching this because you see the highs and lows of Neelix's journey in this episode.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he literally he's already resigned to the fact that he's going to be kicked off the ship. He thinks that this is it. And then when he realizes that Janeway considers him a vital member of this crew and of this family, and just to see him go from the resignation to this almost ebullient, excitement, this what's the word I'm looking for, but he's absolutely
relief
and joy. This absolute joy that comes across his face was great. It was wonderful. I mean, it's all the nuances were there for me in that scene. I loved it.
There was, like I said earlier, on our scale of 1 to 10, like there were some moments like this that I thought were wonderful, that were really wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
What's your theme?
My theme is tell the truth.
Yeah.
Just tell the truth.
Yeah.
That's the first duty. But that is the theme. It's tell the truth, because one lie, one little innocent lie can lead to another and another and another. And the lesson here is just be authentic. Tell the truth. When he told the truth in the end to Janeway in that last scene, even though she had to, you know, enforce the consequences, you could see that it was meaningful to her and she understood it. And if he had just started there instead of getting, you know, one lie to another lie to another lie, if he had just started there and said, I feel like my usefulness here has ended and I want something to do. Like if he'd just come clean and been authentic and truthful up front, instead of trying to make some deal for a map, then that's the, you know, I mean, I can relate to that. How often have I like thought, oh, if I just get this thing or accomplish this or do this, then someone will be happy or someone will, you know, I'll be happy or whatever. And it's usually not about that thing outside of me. It's about what's inside. So that was a great, great episode in that way for Neelix and the character work there. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your theme?
Well, I just want to say Neelix just needed to follow the example of Tick Picarno. Do you like Tick Picarno better?
I do.
Or do you like Nom LaParis?
I like Tick Picarno.
Tick Picarno. Okay. If you listen to Tick Picarno, Neelix, if you listen to what Tick Picarno tells you, you won't go wrong because he's already experienced what it is to not tell the truth. So my theme is literally the importance of taking responsibility for a mistake. It's not easy at first, but the truth will always be the better option, and the truth will set you free.
Nice. Very well put.
Thank you.
Great.
Okie dokie.
Well, great. Well, that was a fun recap.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in for this particular episode of Fair Trade. Join us next week when Robbie and I will review the episode Alter Ego for all of our lovely Patreon patrons. Thank you for your patronage. Please stay tuned for your bonus material, which will include none other than John Ethan Phillips as our special guest to answer a question or two about this episode, Fair Trade. Thanks, guys.
See you next week.